This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
And to take us through it all is we're going to go straight to our journos program, because right now is the Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft joining us. Jonathan, it's great to have your company on the show.
Thank you very much. Good to speak to you both.
Josh just touched on the City Central Coast Mariners game this evening. Melbourne City's Warren Joyce did say he wants to beat the Mariners by 8-0, if possible. Is that just a lack of respect for the opposition, who, despite their position at the bottom of the table, have proved at certain parts, even though sporadically throughout the season, to be somewhat competitive?
I don't know. I try not to buy into those kind of storylines too much. I think that might just be a bit of Warren's northern sense of humour, because he knows that the preferred outcome tonight would be a couple, two or three, enough for them to win, get some momentum heading into the finals, but not actually jeopardise having to travel interstate for that first week of the finals. They want Melbourne victory. That's the best outcome for them. If they're not going to host a game, they only want it to be down the road. So that's absolutely the best case scenario for them. So instead of having that that debate about, if you're 3-0 up, do you sub off Jamie McLaren or any of those kind of conversations, just go massively over the top. Say you want to win 8-0 and just shut that conversation down.
Absolutely. And do you think it's maybe best for them to play a derby in the finals? Because for some reason, I don't know, it's a psychological thing, they seem to get up for these games and victory haven't beaten them this season.
100%. It's just a total no-brainer. And it's, unfortunately for Victory fans, it is the worst case scenario for them, because that over the course of a season, Victory have proven themselves to be a demonstrably better team with a much higher ceiling. But when it all comes down to a one-off scenario, you can't take anything for granted. And like you say, City absolutely raised their game, raised their status for these matches. They've got big game players. And Victory will be coming towards the end of a long campaign. They've had the Asian Champions League as a distraction recently. A few of their star players are looking just a little bit tired. They've got a couple of injuries creeping in as well. So a confident performance, not necessarily based on the scoreline, but a victory and a confident performance from Melbourne City tonight will shake up the next few days, I think, and create quite a tasty narrative heading into that final.
And we touch on the Melbourne Victory. Kevin Muscat has actually said that Lawrence Thomas is battling some soreness and won't be able to play against Western Sydney Wanderers. Do we read into that? Is he on his way out the door?
But this storyline has baffled me over the past few weeks. And reading between the lines, clearly, I can't put those two things together, can I? Reading between the lines, one can infer that there's a problem in that relationship. I don't see personally what Lawrence Thomas has done to not continue as a first choice goalkeeper for Victory. This time last year, he was the standout player in the competition. So there's something going on that we can't tell on this side of the fence. But Matt Acton has done a great job in deputising. So on purely form basis, I don't think there's a lot to lose at the moment between them. But it does surprise when you look at what has made Victory such a successful operation over a long period of time: consistency, backing players through good form and bad. And this just feels, whether the full story will eventually come out, it does feel like Kevin Muscat is trying a particular tactic to get a response out of his player and potentially more players besides who might have thought that their places were secure when maybe taken a bit for granted. So it remains to be seen. But Kevin Muscat has proven himself over recent years that he knows what he's doing. So sometimes from the outside looking in, it might not seem a logical decision that's been taken, but you trust the judgment of the person making it.
And just outside of the, you know, the immediate context, do you think Lawrence Thomas does need to move abroad to, you know, maybe further his career? Because, you know, in my opinion, he's achieved everything there is to achieve as a goalkeeper in the A-League. You know, he's won a Joe Marston medal. He's been the best keeper in the competition. Maybe this is time for him to move on, pursue opportunities abroad.
Absolutely, especially if his first team place is no longer guaranteed, or the suggestion that life is just a bit too comfortable for him at the moment, then absolutely a new challenge would be in order. And his stock is high. He's a good age. He's got great experience. He's a big game player. So you wouldn't think that he'd struggle to find a decent home to go to. And the reputation of Australian goalkeepers around the world is a strong one. So he's got a lot in his favour if he does want to do that. And I struggle a bit with the logic of sometimes in Australian football that there's the A-League is just a gateway to another opportunity. But I think in an example like this, it does make a lot of sense for a new league and a new challenge. So, yeah, I think you're probably right, Josh.
And you'd have to say that if Matt Acton did become the first-choice goalkeeper heading into the final series, do you think that would be a little bit of a backward step for the Victory, given that Lauren Thomas has proven himself throughout the regular season?
Yeah, I think on form, Matt Acton has done well since he's come in. He's made some eye-catching saves, and he fills the shirt very similarly, doesn't he? They have a very similar presence. One argument from a coaching point of view is that you want a form, and the person, for whatever reason, whether it's a suspension or an injury or tiredness or whatever it happens to be, if you're in possession of the shirt and you played well, you deserve to keep it. And I can imagine that at this stage of the season that Kevin Muscat will be playing the mind games as much as possible to get the most out of his team. And if one of those tricks is by retaining Max, and then so be it.
And while we're on the subject of Melbourne Victory, Jonathan, there was an interesting segment during the coverage of the Asian Champions League on Foxtel on Tuesday, where Mark Bosnich used the goal of Victory conceded as an example of you know, why Australian teams shouldn't continue to insist on playing out from the back at all times. I wanted to get your perspective on that, because I think it hits at the heart of a sort of central divide in ideology in Australian football.
Yeah, it's... That was such a... It's a difficult example to comment on generally, just because it was so badly executed. Mm. And it felt like the very start of that process from the goalkeeper playing the ball out. It was a bad decision at that point, and then it was compounded by successive poor decisions. You'd probably have to go back to Kevin Muscat and the logic of how he set out his team to perform on that night. I think what we sometimes struggle with is we have certain common sense approaches to the game. I've got them from my background as a kid growing up in the 80s in Northern England. There are certain truisms that you bring with you into how you watch football, and they need to adapt over time, and it's difficult to adapt them sometimes. You look at the challenges that Ange Postecoglou had, particularly in the last year or two of his time at the Socceroos, trying to get across to people that there's no magic, there's no hocus pocus in a back three. It's just, there's still 11 players on a pitch, and you're just trying to manipulate space in different ways and use different approaches to try and control the game. And I think what you'd have to do is ask Kevin Muscat how relevant that passage of play was to the overall structure of what he was trying to accomplish. If they were trying to suck the opposition in and create space further down the pitch, then absolutely, there's a risk-reward involved in the process that they took. They just executed it badly. I think the challenge that the comments that Bozza raised were that... clearing your lines first, defend first, clear the danger as far down the pitch as possible is a truism that lasted for a long time. And perhaps remains accurate in that instance. But in the context of a much broader approach to playing the game, I don't think it's as black and white as that. And I think we have to be a bit more sophisticated in how we think about breaking down those situations. But clearly in that instance, it went wrong, and there's no challenge that has to be called out. And you know, the point of Bozza in those instances is to call it out and say, that failed. I think my layer on top of that would be, I think we just have to be a bit careful about saying it failed because it's inherently wrong. It failed in that instance, yes, but was the overall process necessarily wrong? And you know, I think that's up for debate.
I do too, Jonathan. I think if you look at the very top echelons of football, the playing through a press is one of the most core tenets of that, those developments at the very top of the game. And it seems to be, you know, a question of whether Australian football is trying to work within its means and adopt a sort of standard underdog mentality, make it difficult for the highly paid, you know, Chinese team and you know, put numbers behind the ball, all that kind of traditional, you know, conventional wisdom, or whether there's maybe a little bit more of an aspiration in the way you're trying to play. Maybe there's a bigger goal at stake, maybe further down the line. And I think, you know, it seems to touch on the legacy of Ange Postecoglou, given that he's managed the Socceroos and Melbourne Victory, and his imprint is still there at that club, and transitioning, you know, to a new regime that's sort of in charge of Australian football, whether you have holdovers from that regime.
Yeah, I agree exactly with what you've said. You have to have the players to do it, and you have to have had the coaching and the players drilled into the routine and the repetition of what the patterns and of the different phases look like. But shifting to a different competition, you look at the dominance of Liverpool and Manchester City in the Premier League. If you're in a similar situation like that against an opposition like that, and you just boot it out of your defence, it's back in your final third in 2 or 3 seconds. So the logic that just getting rid is necessarily an advance on that position doesn't necessarily hold true, especially when you've got teams that are so good at recycling in transition so quickly that, you know, sometimes the best form of defence is attack, and if that attack has to build from that far down the pitch, you know, I agree with what you're saying, that I think how we approach the game as a whole perhaps needs to be a bit more nuanced.
And Jonathan, some of the latest news this week is the appointment of Liverpool legend Robbie Fowler. Brisbane Roar have actually set an unwarranted A-League record, having conceded the most ever goals in an A-League season, that being 71. The club is certainly looking towards better days. What do you think Robbie Fowler might bring to the job?
Yeah, it's a good question. My answer is I've got no idea, because he's never managed at the highest level before. We know he's got all his badges. We know that he was an extraordinary talented footballer, one of the best footballers that I ever saw in the flesh. At his peak, he was outstanding. My answer to the whole Robbie Fowler thing, I know it's polarised, as anything does in Australian football, it's polarised. Mine is that it's less actually about Robbie Fowler himself and more about the structure that the backer group put around him. Mm. We know that the high-performing A-League teams have good football operations managers, that there's a good relationship between the front office and the back office, and that there's a long-term strategic vision. It's demonstrable that hasn't happened at Brisbane in recent seasons. They've lost more games each year for the past 3 seasons. They've squad turn, the list management, that's the phrase I was looking for, has been problematic with a large number of older players and a large number of younger players, and not necessarily blending the two successfully, or having a lot of players in that sweet spot, which we know works in the A-League. So I think it's paramount that Shane Stefanuto, who is now the football operations manager, has a long-term vision, because they've got a lot of good kids. They've still got some decent top-end talent. They just need to figure out where they are in 2, 3, 4 years' time. Next season, they just have to accept it's a transitional season. They need to give, we all need to give Fowler a season just to get his feet under the table. And, you know, a bit like Marcus Babbel this season, figure out which players he wants to keep, who he wants to bring in, which players suit the style of play that he wants to develop, and then you start judging them on season two and onwards. But they have to be in a position where at the start of season two you know exactly where they're going and that they can get to where they want to, because just bringing in Fowler alone as a coach isn't going to do a great deal with one off season to make any kind of changes. They need to be much longer term, and we need to be patient as a football community in allowing them to do that.
The problem I have with that, Jonathan, is the backer group, in my eyes, haven't really demonstrated anything to suggest that we should be trusting them with the as custodians of that club. I mean, there's been some disastrous times. I mean, maybe it's leveled out recently, but there were times where they weren't paying the players on time. You know, there was questions about the financial viability of the club's future. But they do have a new training base now, which is a great development, I'm sure. But you know, do you have any faith in the backroom group as owners?
That's a great point to raise. And I think custodian is the perfect word to use as well. No, my answer is I don't have a lot of faith in their ability to do that. But I think the point that you made about the training base now with Robbie Fowler as coach, if they are upholding their end of the bargain behind the scenes, then hopefully it then becomes about the football, not about the administration. And if the football brains can figure out amongst themselves, then it ceases to really be about the Bakery's ownership. But you're absolutely right that they have been culpable in recent seasons as to why there's been a downturn in results for Brisbane.
And given Robbie's high profile, which players would you like to see him bring out to Australia, or even just sign in general?
Yeah, I don't really buy into that too much as speculation. I guess all I would say to that is I'd like to think that there will be a signing or two that are a consequence of his status. Because that's what you're buying. When you're signing Robbie Fowler, you are signing a player with access to players. It doesn't really matter necessarily where they are in their careers. Like Liverpool won the FA Youth Cup last night. And to that generation of kids, Robbie Fowler would be an absolute hero. So is it at that level? Is it more that there's a generation of senior pros who are coming to the end of their careers that he played with at a different stage in his Premier League lifetime that might be looking for a couple of seasons somewhere warm, somewhere sunny. I don't really mind necessarily, but I think if you are going to get someone like Fowler in, you do want to see a demonstration of the reach that he gives you, but you know, whether that's a high profile name or not, I'm not overly bothered.
I think he's at least good for a few newspaper headlines in Brisbane where they don't usually get the coverage. I mean, just the nickname, and it's a headline writer's dream. So maybe if he can coach, you can maybe lead to some, you know, positive coverage up in Queensland. But there's something completely different I want to finish on, Jonathan. And you know, maybe it's a hornet's nest of opinions, but there's NCIP has again reared its head. I thought this policy was scrapped. Joseph Crotzy was out on Twitter saying that it had been scrapped and they were developing a new policy. There was a media release to that effect a few months back, but Northern New South Wales Football have continued to enforce this sort of lame duck policy in its absence. What's your read on this situation? You know, is it incumbent upon the state federations to keep enforcing this when FFA has said themselves it's not suitable?
Oh, it's a complete no-win situation, this one. The FFA, when the FFA announced that the NCIP would be replaced, the indication from that and the read amongst the football community was that the existing policy had ended and a new one would be brought in. But there's a lag time between actually bringing that new policy in. And until that new policy is in, the existing one stands. And that's the problem. So it's a bit like a good comparison, like a caretaker government, perhaps, almost, where you still have to enforce the rules as they are until there's new ones that can be applied. It does feel very much like Northern New South Wales haven't read the room and have made a decision based on poor logic. That, but in their defence, they were applying the letter of the law, and that's their remit. So it is a complete no-win situation, and again brings into focus the challenges of communication that we all, we're all excited that there are now board members who are approachable and accessible on social media, but it only enhances the shades of grey in the conversation if it's not if it's not clear cut what the situation happens to be. So not for the first time, I think Joseph Carozzi and we've seen it with Rima Nogarotto before and Heather Reid before that we do need to be very careful what we wish for in terms of that level of communication. But one would just hope that common sense prevails and FFA nudges Northern New South Wales to say, look, this policy is being removed. There's no need to be overly officious unless it's absolutely necessary. And in this instance, it doesn't appear to be the case. So hopefully cool heads will prevail.
Well, Jonathan, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us here on Evenings on FNR. We always love hearing from you, and we look forward to speaking to you again very soon.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Jonathan Howcroft joining us from The Guardian Australia for our Journo segment. With that, Louise, I think we'll take a short break, but plenty more still to come, so stick with us.